Abate la rimette dentro, esce Radu, porta vuota. Gol! Gol! Abbiamo battuto il gatto nero! Li abbiamo battuti tutti, Alessio! Grande Alessio! È bella la vita! Lava quella zolla, Alessio! Lava la quella zolla, Alessio!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrud.
What's up everyone? Anthony here. Glad to be back. Got a win to discuss for once. And yeah, follow me on Twitter, Torgrud45.
I hope someone waves back as they watch this. But you guys can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Madison_DT.
Yeah, I noticed when I started doing the intro, then we all have smiles on our faces, and for a good reason. About an hour ago, we just watched Milan beat Torino 1-0. It wasn't vintage, you know, it wasn't one of the most memorable games in recent times, even against Torino. Like, you think back to that 3-2 in the opening game of the 2016-17 season, and some of the better games that we've had, some of the more forgettable games that we've had, like the 2-1 that we lost earlier this season. We avoided a bit of history because they haven't done the double over us in the league since 1985, I think it is.
So well, even good. On top of that, we've lost one home Monday night game in the club's history, and that was in 1935. So we kept that going too.
Yeah. Also, it's our first win over them in the league in almost 5 years.
Yeah, it's been a while
since the 3-2 opener.
Yeah, I put in the preview that I thought it'd be a tough game. I did, because even though Torino had lost 4 going into it, they've lost 7-0 to Atalanta and they'd got spanked in another game in sort of the lead up to this. They sacked Walter Mazzarri and hired a guy who in Moreno, I think it's Moreno, isn't it? Something like that, who I didn't really know an awful lot about. They weren't dreadful, but also they seemed to just have one plan, and that was get the ball to the wing backs and whack it into the box, and they just didn't have any size up front, really. But it was 1-0, but AJ, we should have won that 3 or 4.
Yeah, you know, it's a running joke on Twitter after a game, especially a tough game, tweet out easy 3 points. But this actually was an easy 3 points, in my opinion. You know, it was an exciting game. It was pretty lethargic from both teams, but like, we got the job done and we were never in any danger. I think Donnarumma made like one save, maybe two. And yeah, I mean, there's not many highlights of it, but Zlatan missed one that at first I thought was in. There was another shot from Castillejo that should have went in. There was another one before the Zlatan one that I thought went in. I can't remember who it was from. Obviously, Rebic got his 6th goal in all comps now. Taiteo for top of the club in both league and overall, so that's chill. And yeah, nothing bad to say.
I wonder what odds you would have got around about Christmas time on Rebic finishing as our top scorer this season. With him not even being in the plans at all.
We thought he was going to go back. So
yeah, that was it. And honestly, there's some players who I will say, like did with Liao when he had that sort of mini breakout against Fiorentina, scored that goal. There's some players that I would say just hold the hype a little bit and let's just see if they can do it on a consistent basis. But the importance of the goals that Rebic is scoring, the way that he keeps all of a sudden finding himself in the right positions constantly and has done since the turn of the calendar year, it really does feel like, you know, turn the calendar year and he's turned a new leaf. Like, this is the player that we thought we were signing and the whole lot more. We thought that perhaps he could play a role on that left side whereby he'd assist maybe more than he scored, because that's what he was used to doing at Frankfurt. And now he's just sort of said, nah, forget that. I'm going to be the one who wins the matches for us. And I'd like to know how many points he's actually won us now. But
do you think that it was him getting used to the league, or do you think it was Pioli changing tactics because of Ibra's arrival?
I think it's a combination of both those, and also he's realized he needs to lay off the pasta. You know, I mean, that's funny, but it's true. Like, there was rumors that were, I believe, to be confirmed, correct? They were, or at least alluded
Pioli,
to.
Pioli's hinted it in the past, saying that he showed up after Christmas more determined and more ready to fight. So whether that's psychological or there were rumors about him not being fit. And,
he came in overweight, supposedly, and it wasn't a whole lot, but, you know, any overweightness in football is a problem, and definitely don't see that anymore. I mean, his partnership with both Ibra and Teo Hernandez, it's great. You know, you always see those overlapping runs from them. And honestly, given that they're 18 and 19 and the numbers and they kind of look alike from the camera angle, I never know who's on the wing doing the crosses.
I thought Hernandez scored that goal. I didn't know it was Rebic. I was like, oh, okay. That's cool.
Just the way that the numbers are kind of like straight diagonal. Yeah. So, yeah, he's literally just missing one line for them to be the same. But, no, it was great to see again. And it feels like, particularly since Ibrahimovic's arrival, we've had loads of, if you sort of look at the formation from above, we've had sort of key cogs in place, but it's just needed a little bit of moving around to get things properly ticking. And now with this 4-2-3-1 or 4-4-1-1, you know, when we're out of possession or however you want to sort of look at it, it seems as though we've kind of got everything in gear and people on the players know what their responsibilities are. We look dangerous on the counter, but we were wasteful tonight. And, you know, it just feels as though for once, knowing that the 4-4-2, in my opinion, was not really ever going to be a long-term solution for us, because there were certain games where we were going to get overrun playing like that. And I think before the Inter game, Pioli realised that, and that's why he changed it up. And I think it worked really, really well for 45 minutes in that, and then we came unstuck. That's what happens. Then the Juve game, which of course we will come on to. And then tonight, again, we've seen how fierce we look when we're counter-attacking. And the confidence seems to be sort of there, you know. He said it in his post-match comments, we're creating chances without actually conceding many chances at the other end. And that's where we were lacking with the 4-4-2, in my opinion. This has much more balance. I don't know what you guys think.
Well, I think we're pressing so high.
Yeah,
and that started, I think, with the Inter game, the last three. It may have started even before that, but noticeably in the last three matches, we've just, every time we get the ball, we're running up there. You know, we saw it a few times where we tried to slow down play today, and I think that was just because it was the end of the game and we were holding the lead. But for the most part, as soon as we got the ball, we were up in their end, you know, and that's how you win games. You gotta press, you gotta attack, and prevent shit on the other end.
I think when you look at our squad depth, we perhaps, even though we're only playing in two competitions, and obviously the second leg of the Copa semi-final isn't until the beginning of next month, I still don't really think that we have the depth, particularly midfield, to keep pressing for 90 minutes a game or even for 60 minutes a game. I think we're pressing really hard up until half time and then realizing in the second half that we need to wind it in a bit. Otherwise, we are going to look tired and out of shape a bit.
Well, in attack, Ibra's started three games in a week at 38 years old and played 90 minutes in every single game.
Yeah, I
think them being like against that. Top two teams in the league, top three. You know,
at the time, top two though. Yeah,
yeah.
It's difficult. That is going to take its toll, and I feel like we're sort of on the verge now. I guess we'll find out what happens between now and the end of the season. We've got a few days off, but obviously we play Saturday. It's not like we have a week off. But I guess the players will get tomorrow, Tuesday off, and then be back in training, preparing for that Fiorentina game. Then we have 8 days. We have over a week until the Genoa game, which, you know, on paper doesn't really scare me as much as even today's does. You know, with no disrespect to Genoa, they're just not having a great season, and we should be taking care of business in that. But we'll see. We've kind of put all our eggs in that basket now. And I do think towards the end of the game today in particular, I mean, I mentioned in our chat that I would have actually thrown Liao on up front in place of Ibrahimovic just so we could keep that high press, because they were knocking the ball around their back three and then getting it out to the wing back so easily. And that's when the balls were coming in, and you never know, eventually, you know, the worst teams can score goals doing that. So I would have liked us to perhaps have a slightly higher press, but I thought Bonaventura did well when he came on, actually. I think that's going to be his role now moving forward, is to inject a bit of intensity, a bit of pace, and try and keep the pressing going, really. That should be his role now. But I have to, in all this, give full credit to Pioli, because I think what we're seeing here is somebody who's realised, perhaps unlike Gianpaolo, who has such a fixed identity in the way that he wants to play, and he wanted to impose that immediately, and he wanted it to be perfect from the first game, and it just wasn't. It never really looked like it was gelling at all. Pioli, if you think about it, has come in and he's known that we've got a massive problem scoring goals. So he started with a 4-3-3 to give us, you know, a familiar formation, one that the players were used to get them back into the, like I said, the more familiar roles. And then he moved us to a 4-4-2 so we could start creating more chances, scoring more goals and getting confidence back into the team. And then he realised that that would perhaps jeopardise our structural, you know, our structure moving forward, and that we'd start conceding chances and conceding more goals to the bigger teams. And that's when he realised to sort of gauge it back a little bit to a 4-2-3-1. So I think in the week that Ancelotti's come out, obviously, in his Everton press conference and said, you know, the best coaches don't have a strict tactical identity. They adapt with the squad and they adapt with various situations. I think it's absolutely bang on. And you know, we've been speaking so much about who this potential next manager might be for next season. But with every week that goes by, I just keep thinking, should we just give him another year and see what he can really do and build some serious momentum?
I wonder where we would be if he was with us from the start of the season.
We'd be in the same spot because we were still horrible. We had no players who were in form. We weren't scoring goals. I think a lot of it is Pioli changing the formation, but also Ibra injecting that urge to win in the team.
And I definitely agree with that. But I also think the devolution from Gattuso's play to Gianpaolo's is a lot more significant than it would have been changing from Gattuso to Pioli. I feel like that transition would have been a lot smoother and we might have been able to carry a bit of momentum.
I kind of agree with that.
Perhaps that was the point, though, is that we wanted to go in a new direction from where Gattuso was taking us, and it would have been a kind of similar appointment, but we had the experimentation, it failed, and ultimately we're still paying the price for it, really, in terms of our standings. And, you know, today was our 10th win, I believe, 10th win in the league of the season, on the same day that Man United racked up their 10th win, and they're supposedly in a big crisis as well. Difference is they're 3 points off the top four, and we're 10. So it's one of them where it's like we shouldn't really get too carried away and acknowledge that there is still a big gap between us and Atalanta, and that is perhaps a testament to the gap in consistency and in quality. But the reason that those teams that are above us are doing so successfully, in my opinion, is because of the stability of a project like Lazio, the stability of a project like Atalanta, where they've given a coach who is well-respected within the Italian game in Inzaghi and in Gasperini the time that they need, the transfer windows that they need to work and put together the squad that they want. And they've got them playing exceptional football. And we've seen through the opening, I think it's now 19 matches that Pioli's had, and he's won 9 of them. You might say that's not particularly impressive, but I think it'd be fair to say the general consensus is that our style of play has massively improved and we're actually kind of fun to watch again.
I think surface level, it's not impressive, but when you dig deep into it, it is, given the competition he faced in his first few games. You know, he came in and had to play the Napoli's, Roma's, the Lazio's, the Juve's, things like that, that Gianpaolo didn't have to play, you know. We're almost done with the stretch of games that Gianpaolo had, and that'll end on the 1st of March. And those games, comparing them, I think that'll be interesting, and I believe we haven't lost to any of them this go around. You know, we haven't lost a single game in 20. Well, no, we did. We lost to Inter.
We lost to Inter, but yeah.
Yeah, but that's our only loss. I mean, everything else has been a win.
Yeah, I mean,
and we essentially lost 45 minutes to Inter. You know, we won. I know that's a really like hollow way of looking at it, but it is important to acknowledge that it wasn't how the scoreline looked.
Well, and we also
positives even I from also the think that our 45 minutes looked more constructive than theirs. I think that their 4 goals were off the breakaway. A goal's a goal. Don't get me wrong. They definitely should have won that game, but our passing, our pressing, everything in the first half just looked like an amazing team. Mm-hmm. But going back to your original question, I would definitely keep Pioli next season because we need that consistency.
Without
the consistency, we're just going to keep on going up and down, you know. And you know,
now, is there a manager you would pick over Pioli if the
there are some there has to be some names. Mm-hmm. There has to be some names that you would throw in there. And obviously, I think all this starts with the ownership situation. If that does change, then they're going to have the guy that they want to bring in. And that probably filters down from CEO to, you know, they might want to replace Gazidis. They might want to replace Maldini, Boban, Massara, who will then want to bring in their own guy. So that, but casting that to one side, let's say the ownership situation doesn't change. I would stick with him, but only if a serious proven winner in terms of they've won major honours became available. Allegri is one of those guys.
Would you take Spalletti over Pioli in this situation, seeing as that was like the main debate when he did come in? I don't think I would. And I knew I threw a hissy fit about that situation, but
we all did.
At this point, I think Pioli's done well enough to deserve that second season. And the stability is more important to me than the slight improvement in Spalletti, I think.
Yeah, I think so as well. Spalletti is a
serial
top four finisher, but also a serial 2 to 3 year manager. Like, he tends to self destruct towards the end of his second season, maybe just a bit after that. But I like Spalletti and I understand what he brings. But I'm with you, AJ. I really don't. The salary alone, you know, it's probably going to cost three times as much to bring a guy like that in. And you think, are we going to see such a marked improvement for that? I know we're saying go out and pay the top dollar and attract a top manager, but does Spalletti fall into that category? He's certainly not on the level of an Allegri, of a Pochettino, of a whoever.
I think he fits the mold for Serie A, but as far as Europe renowned, he does not. Allegri does. If Allegri wants to come through and we could afford it and we're willing to flush up the cash, then I'm okay with that transition. I think he's stable enough. He's proven enough. People will be excited to play for him.
But yeah. Is it worth it to bring in a top manager, pay that top wage, if we're not going to bring in the players?
No, I don't think so.
I agree.
I think so.
If this is the squad that we got, then let's keep it. You know?
But what I would say is that perhaps bringing in a top manager would be an indication that we've sold a project to them. And we've said, look, you're going to get some backing. And then they're going to be able to... That's the reason they'd sign on the dotted line, because we're not going to be able to offer them Champions League football, at least as it stands currently.
But the way to do this is not do it like Yong Hong did, where he came in and he bought 11 players in one summer.
No,
I think did the same thing that year, and we both were horrible.
No, but you I do think it was almost necessary in that season, though. Because, I mean, if you look at the squad that we had then, we really did need replacements in every position. So, I think most of those players were improvements, if not all of them. Granted, most of them are gone now, and we still built off that. But I do think that rebuild was a necessary evil. I mean, it's obviously caused problems for us since, but I don't think in that specific situation it was a bad idea. Now, if we did that again next summer, it'd be terrible. But if we're looking to spend $250 million in one window, then let's do it on, you know, two or three massive stars. Let's not do it on 11 backups.
I think that's the thing about this summer in particular, is that we don't really need to go out and get double figures in terms of amount of new players. Gattuso said it perfectly towards the end of last season. He said this team is 2-3 senior players, leader players away from, you know, he wanted to go and get Ribery, for example, who, injury and suspension aside, has been pretty good for Fiorentina this season. And he wanted to go out and get, you know, veteran guys, but still very, very much functional players to just kind of not necessarily bump up the ability huge amounts, but just to take the mentality of the squad to the next level and make sure that they respond better to disappointment and everything that it brings to have players like them there. And I think we're looking at a similar situation this summer where I don't think there are many positions at the moment where you're actively looking for replacement players. I think the left side of the defence is pretty sorted with Romagnoli and Teo Hernandez. You've got Bennacer. I personally like what I've seen from Kessié in the last three games, so I would keep him, but also look if an opportunity came up for someone who's better than Kessié or somebody who... For example, him, then that's a position that you look at. Rebic, there's no reason to suggest we need anybody else on the left except perhaps a bit of depth that Bonaventura leaving would allow us the salary to hopefully go out and address. Castillejo looks pretty good. We'll see about Salamaca as being his backup. Right back.
I think we need a right back. I would replace right back.
I was going to say, before we move completely off the Torino game, I thought after Gabbia came on, and I hope Simon Chiesa's injury isn't too bad, because I thought he was having a good game up until then as well. But Gabbia came on because Musaccio's got a problem as well. But the right side of our defence looked very solid. Every now and again, a little too slow out to crosses. And Castillejo does have a tendency, like Suso did, to get fooled by fake crosses. You know, where they turn back and turn back. I saw him got done three times by the same player. But on the whole, like the right side, in my opinion, looked really good with Gabbia and Calabria there. I'm not saying that that's the solution moving forward.
It
especially
looked solid, and I was really pleased with Gabbia. I was nervous for it, you know. I thought
this
might
as well
be where it collapses for us. And to be honest, I felt better with him coming on for a debut than if Musacchio came on, because with Musacchio, him and every right back that we have just cannot link up well, you know, and that's where the problems lie for us. So Gabbia was nice. It was nice fresh air. And I think it played to our advantage because no team has a scouting report on him. They don't know how he's going to act, how he plays. We do. So we were able to work with that, you know. We saw him get up on the left wing in the last second of the game.
That was fantastic.
Yeah. It was great. It was great. But with Musacchio, all the teams in the league know his mistakes, know his tendencies, and they're able to exploit that, you know. Whereas this new guy, they have no idea anything about him. So I think it worked out well for us that way.
It's an interesting point as well. Obviously, Musacchio and Calabria / Conte, as you say, haven't been able to seemingly get any real proper chemistry going in terms of the positioning's been all over the place. They've left gaps, they've let runners go, all that kind of stuff. Gabbia and Calabria played in the Primavera together.
Yep.
And they instantly looked like they kind of knew exactly what was going on. And I'll give props to Calabria. For me, you know, I know Conte's been suspended, but he's got that starting spot back for me.
He
just looks so much more solid. And I've said this all along, I think Calabria is a better defensive fullback, and it gives you so much more balance when Teo Hernandez's average position's on the halfway line. You need it, because Conte doesn't know where his man is, like, the whole time. And I really hope that he's seen enough from these last couple of games to stick him in there now moving forward.
Allows Castillejo to get further up. You know, he doesn't have to drop back and cover for Conte, who might be overlapping. You know, Calabria doesn't do that. Occasionally he'll be up there, but it's usually off a throw-in or a corner or something, you know, and then he gets right back. So
I've noticed he's been doing the exact same thing that Hernandez does on the other side, where you'll actually find him more centrally rather than overlapping, which I kind of like. I do kind of like that, because it means Kessie is staying back usually.
Yeah.
And we're saying, well, let's put our most threatening player there. And he had that shot saved against Juve, did Calabria, that was dipping right into the top corner, and Buffon palmed it away. I like the way that that's working.
Let's talk about the Juve game. Let's get into that. Another game kind of like the
fuck Paolo Valeri.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a game we won, you know, 90 plus minutes of, and then we drew.
It's annoying,
It is.
It is very annoying.
I hate to, you know, chime conspiracy theory or anything like that, but it's unique how the referee was the same referee in the Lecce game the next day, who had the exact same call and said no penalty, but yet it was a penalty because it's Ronaldo and Juve. So, you know, fuck them. But
I can't believe that Sport Media Set then did a thing on it the next day where they were saying this is why he was right to award the penalty. And they said that, yeah, he had his back turned, but his leg was raised so high up that his arm was raised up, which means that he was enlarging the size of his body to block the ball. And I was like, how much have they paid you to write that?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? That
is
just
who's sponsoring
dreadful.
This article.
It always happens for them now.
Yeah, well, and there was Calhanoglu even posted it on his Instagram after. He said the picture of, was it Alexandro, you know, who's sliding with his arm like this, hits him right here. No pen.
It was like that.
It was horrible.
With their defender. It wasn't against us, but...
Benucci had a few?
Yeah,
it wasn't Benucci.
Yeah.
It was the Dutch guy.
But Bonucci, I will say, Bonucci did get a harsh penalty given against him, in my opinion, for a very similar thing in the AS Verona game.
Yes.
Where it was a near post header from a corner. And he had judged that even though his arm might not have been in an unnatural position, it basically blocked a header that was going in. So they then just thought, well, we've got to give that, really. But I don't know, they're just... Without going into the whole VAR debate too much, there is no consistency. We might as well just start calling it every time it hits someone's hand in a box and have it like have it like basketball and have like
That's 10, the only way to 10 get around
free
it.
Throws and, you know, 10 penalties a game and just... I don't actually want that to happen, but I'm just saying, if you're going to do it, let's just have a bit of consistency, because VAR was brought in to eradicate all this debate and stuff, and all it's done is enhance it and fire the blame at the referee on the field and then those above. And
the ref is calling it inconsistent himself,
right? Then there's issue. It's the very next day and it's an identical call. I mean, maybe I'll put a picture of it if I could find one when I edit this video, but they're identical. You know, there's Calabria getting hit in the back and then the Lecce guy getting hit in the back, and they're like, no, that one's chill, it's cool.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad. And then they referred back to an incident in the, I want to say it was the second round of the season, and this one was virtually identical. As in, it wasn't quite a bike, it was just a volley, but it hit a Cagliari defender's arm, and they gave a penalty for that as well. And then they did a big presentation in front of all the referees in the league and said, this is why it shouldn't have been a penalty. Mm-hmm. You know, he had his back to the ball, he was a yard away, he wasn't deliberately enlarging the size of his body because he didn't know anything about it. And from now on, we're not ruling this a penalty. But I just knew as soon as he went over to look at that screen that he was going to give it. I just knew it.
Only because it was Juve, though. That's the only reason I feel like it was going to be given.
And even though we can sort of make it out as if we're being trivial about it and not really that angry, I think it's probably cost us the tie. Maybe the three suspensions did as well, because obviously three guys picked up yellows and then Teo got sent off as well. Not that that is going to end up mattering, but if we'd taken a one goal lead there, let's say, and they had to score did want to score in the first half. And who knows, the longer we take it, the more likely we are to hit them on the break. And then if it's 2-0 and we've got that away goal, does it become, you know what I mean? When you win a game, right. 1-0
I agree. Completely agree. They had the advantage now. They get, obviously, the away goal, so it's not really an even 1-1 game. They're basically up 2-1 right now. And then we're going to their stadium, where I don't think we've ever beat them, correct?
We've not won at Juve away in like 10 years, or approaching 10 years. It's bad. It stopped a run
since
of
the stadium's existed. We've never won there. I mean,
it's ominous, and I've accepted it. I have accepted it. I thought, if anything, we might lose that first leg because there was pressure on us to take a win there, and that worked into their hands, but... It is interesting, I do think, as well, that the mass opinion is that there's nothing to fear about this Juve side anymore. But
you know what? We also got a 1-1 draw. We can get a 1-1 draw there and take it into extra time. That is very realistic to do. And then take it into PKs, and then it's anyone's game.
Maddie with the positivity.
We like playing Juve on penalties as well, don't we?
We do. Yeah.
And if they would have won the first game, there's no way that we would have won the second leg.
Right.
But a tie, I mean, the way it happened was not favorable.
I'm just nervous because two of our best attackers are suspended, and Castillejo, who's arguably up there. I mean, so this lineup that we're going to see in the return leg, we're going to see either Laxalt or Calabria on the left, and then we're going to see Conti on the right, I believe, if
Calabria's on the left, yeah.
And then we'll have Salamakers in Samu's spot, and then Leao up top, I guess. I mean,
it's not ideal, is it? I mean, it lends itself more for the counter attack, I guess. If we can pick our moments, then who knows? I mean, we missed enough chances today that you think bottle them up. And what it does remind me of, in a way, I know it's a different situation, really, but last season when we went to Lazio and drew the first leg 0-0, and we thought, excellent, job done, we're back in the final, because we should beat them comfortably at home, and it just didn't pan out at all. A bit of complacency on Juve's part would be nice, and if we could stun them by taking the lead or something, then who knows. But to be fair, we'll probably just end up previewing this game nearer the time. But even though the opinion is that this Juve isn't as dominant and they're still sort of finding their feet under Sarri a little bit, it's important to acknowledge that they're 3 points clear at the top of the league and we outplayed... Oh, of course, because Lazio won last night. But they're at the top of the league and they are winning games still week in, week out, despite not being at their best. And we outplayed them, I would say, for the best part of 90 minutes. So that in itself, even though we didn't get the result, is a big indicator of how far we've come. Because I don't care. I don't care what, you know, what people say. Juve are absolutely gunning for this competition. I know we said it might take a bit of a back burner because they're in the title race. And
I disagree. I think Sarri's won one title his entire career, and he's at Juve, where it's the easiest place to win titles. He's going to go for as many as he possibly can.
Also, they're going to be playing in Champions League, I think, the week before our game. So they're going to be tired, you know, and if we can capitalize on it.
Are they playing? They're playing on Wednesday, right?
I'm honestly just guessing that it's going to line up to where they...
It would be the second leg. You're right. You know. I'm sorry. Yeah, it will line up.
I assume it's...
Yeah, because it's the third or the fourth that we play them. And if... So that would be, 2 weeks. So, yeah, okay. Maddie's right.
So they've got rough... I'm just looking at their schedule here. They've got Spal away on Saturday, which they should win, that'll I guess. Easy. But then they've got Lyon in the first leg on Wednesday, 26th of February. Then they've got Inter at home 3 days before they play us. And that could be a massive, massive title game.
I mean, we also had Inter at home 3 days before they played us.
So we're going to draw 1-1 and win on pens. Nice one.
There we go.
Job done. You heard it here first.
Yeah.
Don't put money on it, though.
But no, it was a good game. And honestly, I was buzzing to see such a big crowd as well. It set a record for the Coppa Italia semifinals, bigger than the crowd that Inter had for that Napoli game. And it looks like we know...
set a record as well for this season, at least, for Serie A?
I doubt it because the capacity is reduced at the moment. So it should be less than...
For this season, I don't...
It was more than
the last week.
Yeah. It was good to see such a big crowd. I really thought that they were going to go away with a win, but it is what it is. But overall, decent week, I would say.
Not a bad week for
us.
Not
as unhappy as we have been.
It's interesting because
there's been a lot more doom and gloom than there has been in the last week.
It's weird because of the last four games, we've got two draws, a loss, and a win. But I still feel like we've been unstoppable this whole 2020, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to go on another tear, at least for a bit here. It just depends on our fitness level. Like you said, Zlatan played 390 minutes this week, and then last week he played 120 minutes against Torino. I mean, at 38, you got to be getting tired. And I think today we saw tired from everyone. You know, it was a slower pace. We got the job done, and we were never really at risk, but... we slowed down, and I think it's going to be really helpful to have the day off on Tuesday tomorrow. We play Saturday, so it's not the longest break, but after that we get 8 days off, I believe. So, you know, that's going to be key for us, I believe.
Yeah, did you see Ibra after the game? You know, where they do the interviews in the mixed zone in front of all the branding and stuff like that, he just stormed through. And then Pioli got asked about it after the game and said that he was really angry about missing that chance early in the second half. And that he knows he should have done better and that he knows he could have killed the game off so early and made it less difficult for his teammates, which I was just like,
started that's applauding. That's the kind of striker that I want.
Started exactly. applauding in my own house. I was like, this is our guy, man. This is our guy. But I will say that the way that he went at it, opened his foot up and the way that it was sort of slicing it, I thought inside the top corner, if that had have gone in, the roof would have blown off, man. That would have
also, my roof did blow off. I went insane. I thought it went in. And then I realized the TV was dead silent. I'm like, why am I the only one cheering?
Yeah.
Eight years ago to this weekend, Ibra scored for Milan. It came up in my Facebook memories.
Oh, that's funny.
Another one. Let's have another one on Saturday.
I like it.
And then what was the... Oh, yeah, the Castillejo shot, which you dragged into the side net, and I think he should have done a little bit. Oh, yeah.
I thought he should have taken it first time. for the
he should have, yeah. Honestly. But I think he'd seen Ibra do it and thought, I'm not doing
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
And also, what is this obsession that Castillejo has with shooting on his left foot? He's right footed. He always wants to get better.
He's not.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a strange
How
one.
Did you guys think Paqueta looked?
I was just going to ask, what did you think?
Confused, conflicted. He wasn't terrible, but he just, and it's the same problem we've had with him all season long. He just, that final pass is never correct. He'll win it. He'll do the nice little trick move. He'll get around his defender. And then Ibra will be wide open on the right, and he'll go for the guy that's double covered on the left that needs a through ball over the top. And it's like,
I feel like he's never putting enough pace on his passes or his shots.
I agree.
Yeah, he's
thing he brings that not many others do is his press. He's always there, and it does leave open a spot where he should be. But at the same time, it forces that defender or whoever has the ball on the other team.
He's like a puppy.
To make a move.
he just runs. You know,
just follows you. Yeah.
Yeah, I won't take full credit for this as a take because it was mentioned by who mentioned it? I can't even remember. Someone in the chat mentioned it about how I seem to notice the way that our press goes. We tend to do it in bursts. So we'll sort of sit back and contain a little bit for, let's say, 3 minutes. And then for the next 2 minutes, we'll press really intensely, try pin them in the corner, get them to make a mistake. And particularly when teams try pass it around their own back four, if we can close off the passing lanes, we tend to just descend on them. And that is basically how Klopp's pressing works and all that kind of stuff. But I will give him credit because he played a part in the goal tonight. You know, he was the one who picked up the loose ball after it had been poked through. And then he assisted the assist. He did, yeah. And it was a nice flick, you know. It's a pass that I probably could have made, but you've got to be there. But then I do agree also that at times he did seem to be the only one who was running at the fullback or running at the centre-back. And sometimes you might say, oh, he's showing effort, he's showing desire and stuff like that. But I also think you need an understanding tactically of when the right time is to do that.
You need a plan. You can't just be aimlessly running.
I wonder if, with the bad decisions that he's making, those have kind of plagued his time here so far, in my opinion. But I wonder if he's snatching at things a little bit. You know, he wants the headlines so much, and he almost wants to boost his own confidence by doing something right, that he's just been too trigger happy with certain things. Because Paqueta, for me, has always been the player that I've found myself shouting at the TV at the most. As if to say, oh, you know, Paqueta's got the ball, he's bearing down towards goal, there's options to his left and right. As you say, always picks the wrong one. And those could be key passes, those could be assists, and those are meant to be his bread and butter. And he never seems to get it right.
He did have an almost goal in the beginning. That was the other missed chance. It just came back to me. Sorry, Zlatan gave a beautiful flick in the area, and Paqueta went just wide, skimmed the bar, it looked like.
I understand those who say that he should have put his foot through that a bit more, but also, you know, there's plenty who in our team would have put their foot through that, and it'd have ended up in the, you know, rosette or whatever. Yeah. But I think he went at that the right way. He tried to catch Sirigu on his wrong foot, and
you have to take that first
it was
time
just
like
a little
that.
Bit weak. Yeah. It was just a little bit weak. So I don't really particularly blame him for that. It's just the things that he's meant to be good at, the things that we paid 35, 38 million euros for, they're not there. And, you know,
he's young, though.
He is.
Keep that in mind.
He is. There are younger players that are doing things better, though. I don't know what happens in the summer. I really don't. I think it takes a pretty remarkable turnaround at this point for us to keep him beyond the summer, you know. I think we try to recover a little bit of his value between now and the end of the season, and we flip him to the highest bidder, and then we look for someone who's perhaps a little bit more suited or someone who's a bit more versatile and could play both holding mid and attacking midfielder. Someone like, I can't remember if I've mentioned him on here, but that Castrovilli at Fiorentina looks absolutely excellent, and he's a boyhood Milan fan. He actually apologised when he scored against us earlier in the season. But just
let's
someone who's
that, though.
Yeah,
Fiorentina away. Let's jump onto that one.
So I don't think there's any issues here apart from maybe if Simon is injured. I would keep Calabria at right back, definitely.
Yeah.
We don't have any real options. I hope Krunic is back fit for this. There hasn't really been an update on it, but my God, we could use some fresh legs in midfield at times.
Yeah, they get tired. I would
still like Paqueta to play.
How many more yellow cards can Bennacer get before his next suspension? Because he's at 11 this season.
15. It goes 5, 10, 15. So.
Oh, no, that makes sense. Okay, obviously. Yeah.
He is like a leech that does not let go of the defender.
His ball control is impeccable, and I think it's just because he's so short, that center of gravity. Yeah.
He does remind me of, don't laugh, but he does remind me of Messi when he gets the ball. The way that he jinks in and out of players and the low center of gravity, like you said, it is exceptional. And I do often see him and wonder if we had stuck with that 4-3-3, could we have got away with playing him as that box-to-box guy? But, you know, we've got him now in a position where he's thriving, so don't mess that up.
Whenever I see him on the ball, I'm like, man, we got him at such a good price.
Yeah. It's funny because I see him and my first thought is, get rid of it, pass the ball, like you're under attack. And then he just scoops it perfectly around two or three defenders every time. And I'm like, wow, okay.
It's funny because...
you know best, not me.
I guess
a few weeks in it will have been, we had a discussion. Oh, it was probably before the Derby game, saying that we missed out on Sensi big time. You know, he's gone to Inter and he's scoring goals already and he looks like every bit the dynamic midfielder that we needed. Meanwhile, Bennacer can't get a game because the 98-year-old Lucas Bielia is keeping him out of the team.
That was early on in the season.
And I seen a tweet from Cammy earlier in the week and he's saying that, you know, with his injury problems, there's no chance that Inter are going to redeem Sensi's buyout now. You know, it was a loan with option to buy. I just thinking it is amazing how narratives turn throughout a season. And I agree. Yeah, I think it looks like we got Rebic for a bargain price at the moment. Bennacer, I mean...
when did we change to Rebic?
Speaking of which, in the last week, there has been some stuff saying that we're going to try and negotiate a fee for
so Rebic. I was under the impression that it was a two-year loan with an option to 25. And I read on our site today that it's a two-year dry loan.
Yeah, that was the thing that was reported when the deal was going through, but then it kind of was ambiguous with the club's statements, mm-hmm. and then it was just like, no, it is a two-year dry loan. I guess that's fair because you don't know how the respective valuations of the players are going to fluctuate over the next 2 years.
Right.
I think if it had been a one-year loan, they could have perhaps agreed that 25 mil was an appropriate valuation for both Andres and Ram.
How much longer do they have in their contracts, though? Because if... You know, at the end of the 2 years, if they only have one left, then right there, you know, it could be like, look, we're not going to give you $40 million for, even if he's been great, a guy with a year left on his contract, you know?
I will have a look. So he's on a contract until 2022. So he will have a year left on his deal.
Yeah.
I think Andres Silva, off the top of my head, is the same. So
right.
At least they have a similar...
even though they were two separate deals, they were the exact same thing. It was a swap without being called a swap.
So at least
do you think we take Silva back?
No.
Nah. No. I know that pains AJ to say it, but honestly, if we could negotiate something in the summer where they just said, yeah, let's swap. I mean, to acquire a player like Rebic for Silva, who
essentially free,
doesn't have an awful lot of use for. The only thing that I can see being a problem for that is the balance books. So we spent so much on Silva, we might want to make back some actual cash by selling him rather than just having it as a player swap. But I guess it writes off the value of the player side. I don't know how that works, but there was a whole thing about why we didn't want to include Kessié in a swap deal because we wanted to get the actual capital for it. Be interesting to see how that one goes. Fiorentina, are they in the league?
They're pretty low.
Yeah,
they were super hot fire when we played them in the return, and now they're super doo-doo, so I think we'll win.
Super doo-doo.
Super doo-doo, dude.
What fire? I haven't heard that name for a while.
I wouldn't change much of the lineup. I feel like Paqueta offers so much that Çalhanoğlu does not, one of them being speed and agility, but Çalhanoğlu can pass and shoot. You know, so
Plus, he gives us that extra threat on the free kick. I mean, I know he's only scored one with us, but having it still.
You know what's
nice.
Wild is that the summer that Rodriguez and Calhanoglu joined us, they were, I think, just behind Messi for the most free kick goals in Europe.
Yeah.
And between the two of them, only one was scored, and that was Calhanoglu.
Yeah, and Conte had the most goals from a defender in Serie A that season, right, too. And then he was dead for 2 years.
Yeah, I'm just looking. Fiorentina 13th. They're 7 points behind us, so they have had a drop-off from that time they came and spanked us at San Siro. They got rid of Montella, and they've got Iacini in charge again there. Their recent results, they drew 0-0 with Genoa, lost to Inter in the quarterfinal 2-1, quarterfinal of the Cup, lost 3-0 at Juve, lost to Atalanta 2-1, and then went to Sampdoria and won 5-1 yesterday. So they're a little bit all over the place. I'm hoping that that 5-1 win doesn't absolutely spring them to life and we're playing them at the wrong time here. But I do look at this Fiorentina team now and the lineup doesn't particularly scare me too much anymore. There's only really Chiesa who I would judge to be a massive threat. Obviously, I really like Castrovilli, but he's...
Is Ribery injured?
Yeah.
Typically, yeah.
Of course, they have got...
Depends on the week.
They have got a certain Patrick Cutrone that we might need to worry about.
Nah, he won't score against us. He'll purposely miss if he gets the chance. Yeah,
I think he'll purposely miss for sure.
Yeah. That kid's an arc.
When he was on Wolves, he got a Milan tattoo, and then like a month later, he joined them, and I was like...
No, he had that. He had that when he was with us.
Did he?
Yeah, the one on his wrist.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah,
I'm wrong.
He got it just after he made his debut, didn't he? And people think that it was a new one, but it was actually just he'd had it touched up somewhere to like have it look back to when he first had it, which is fair. Fair prediction, Fiorentina. I think we struggle here. I'm going to look at the head-to-head while you do
it's
your...
7 wins, 7 losses, 5 draws.
Is that away or just in general?
Just overall. In the last
while. I think we win
I think
this
we've
game.
Done well against Fiorentina recently though, right?
I can't remember the last time we won there.
3-1.
Won last year. Or last season.
Oh, was it the season before when we couldn't
We beat them in May away. We lost 3-1 at home in the last game. Beat them away last season. Lost at home again last season. Crushed them 5-1 at home the season prior. Drew before that, then we won. A draw, a win. So, I mean, we're in recent form. We've done well.
Okay, that fills me with a bit more confidence.
Yeah, I think it's our turn to smash them, and I think they're an easily exploitable team. I don't know if we're going to go up 3-0. I mean, we saw our finishing today. We definitely could have done that, but if we come out with the same mentality that we've had in the last three games, I don't see why you can't expect that type of victory. But it just, I don't know, it depends on the fitness level of our boys. You know, they're getting only a few days off between these two. Mm-hmm. So it really depends on what kind of form they come in, but I'm going to go with the win. I think 2-0. I'll go Rebic and Zlatan.
So we've won twice at the Artemio Franchi, which is Fiorentina's ground, in the last 8 years. So not brilliant, but... you know, we haven't lost away to Fiorentina in the league since early in the 2015 season.
Mm-hmm. But in those 8 years...
That was that first game, actually, wasn't it, when we lost 2-0 there, yeah.
In those 8 years, we didn't have Zlatan.
That's correct.
And I'm going to say that every single week, but it's a true statement because the effect he has is just incredible.
It would be another one of those that it's perhaps not the same statement as... you know, going and winning away at Lazio or something like that. But it would be another of those where if we can go professional performance, win again, try get some distance from the likes of Parma, Cagliari, even Verona, that would be nice.
Unfortunately, they all have easy games, unless Torino wants to step up against Parma. But, yeah, I don't...
Well, if they're at home, then I don't know. But, yeah, it's a difficult one. So 2-0 for you, Maddie.
3-1 us.
Three. Scorers?
I said 2-0. Rebic, Zlatan.
Ibra, Rebic, and Çalhanoğlu.
Çalhanoğlu, yeah. Well, this is the thing. I'm trying to imagine the team because I don't know how long Çalhanoğlu is going to be out. I've seen some guy tweet something saying that these are notoriously hard injuries to kind of predict.
If Çalhanoğlu does not start, Paqueta is going to start again. I'll say Bonaventura is going to come on for him and score the winner. But the final goal.
Perhaps ceiling goal, yeah. I think we... I'm always the pessimistic one in this. But I think we win 1-0. And I think someone different gets the goal. Romagnoli headed from a corner.
Gabbia.
Daniel Maldini.
Gabbia going to get it.
I think
Gabbia's
going to
play.
He was an absolute beast today, was Romagnoli. If Gabbia scores...
a good team.
Yeah. If Gabbia scores, that would be amazing. That would be amazing. There were some pictures that came out of him in the mix zone after the game today, and he looked visibly excited to have made his debut. So I really like that.
It wasn't just a debut. It was a long debut. You know, it was the majority of the game.
It was only a league debut as well. It is worth noting. He did actually come on in the Coppa Italia, but no, fair play to him. Good on him. So that's that. Yeah, I'll go with 1-0 and an unknown scorer. I'll say Romagnoli, yeah. Market rumours, there's not really been too much outside of, you know, the usual manager speculation that's sort of come about. Mostly being reports in the last week of sort of disagreements between the various key figures at the club, between like Gazidis and Maldini, Boban, all them. They all want their man and none of them seem to be able to agree. I don't know, we've just spent a lot of time praising Pioli for the work that he's done and stuff like that, but likes of Ranić, Marcelino, I mean, does that really fill either of you with a lot of excitement?
None of it do. I'm happy with Pioli or Allegri. I don't, or Guardiola, but that's not happening. So, I mean, I'm good with what we got.
Never say never.
Well, that's it. If he's going to leave Man City.
Man City's going to be, they're in trouble, man.
Nothing will happen to him.
I mean, as Milan fans, we could give them an hour-long podcast in this situation. I heard they're going to be, they might lose some of their titles from 13 to 16. They're being investigated now. Might be playing in the championship. Who knows? Which would give Mourinho a title for his United season.
Yeah, but that's if they do it the same way that Italy did it, where they awarded the Scudetto to Inter. They shouldn't have done that. They should have just null and voided it that season.
Do you know how pissed Liverpool fans would be for last season?
Well, Liverpool would get one in 2016.
Liverpool would get one, yeah. They would get
it in 2016.
Yeah, depending on what period they are investigating, they would get one for last season. But I don't think they'd like...
I would love for them to get relegated. They won't.
No.
But that'd be fantastic. It would just be so fun to see.
It would be. Thiago Silva's stuff is starting to ramp up. He doesn't have a future at PSG. Apparently, we're interested in bringing him back. I feel like we have discussed this before. But
yeah, we've said yes.
We talked about it last week, yeah.
Yeah.
What about... Go ahead. We'll come back to me.
The situation with Thiago Silva hasn't really changed for me. I have concerns about his salary and his age, but then I look at our defensive department and I think, so if Musacchio's not right because he's got a muscle problem, Simon's got a... I still won't bring myself to say his surname because I just can't do it. Kier's got a muscle problem as well. Duarte is still out until probably...
Shit, I forgot we even had Duarte. Holy cow.
So we've been forced... I don't say forced, but throw Gabbia on in that situation today. Cover, you know, another veteran guy in the locker room who knows about winning trophies and has lived through at least a successful time at this club. I'm all for it if it is affordable. But I also understand if there are other targets we're looking at. I've seen Vertonghen linked during the week.
That'd be a good move too.
Another free transfer that would be. So we will see. Back here.
Donnarumma, not as defender, but his contract. What do you guys do?
Renew him. I mean, I don't think we have a choice. Without him, we would have never had Europe in the last five seasons. We'd have been bottom half of the table each year.
I do wonder, I've started to wonder how much of this is a big media strategy from Elliot, because if we'd have sort of been completely open to the renewal of Donnarumma and sort of put down a blank checkbook in front of him and Raiola and said, you know, right, we're open to negotiating, what do you want? But all we've heard in the media is they're not going to raise his salary. If anything, they want to reduce it. You know, they're not going to give him more than the 6 million that he currently gets. And then what happens if, you know, it gets to next month, we sit down with Raiola and say, all right, look, we didn't want to budge, but we'll give him 7 million a year. And he just signs there and then. That would be actually superb negotiating tactics, or the ideal way to go about it. I'm still worried about how this works out. I really am. The longer that it drags on, the more uncertain everything becomes, the more the rumours creep in about top teams being interested, and all that does is drive up his price. But I think if he does go this summer, we are at least going to get a substantial fee for him, and that should go into investing in some other areas of the squad and bringing in some real quality. So I guess it's a flip side, but I see Donnarumma as one of the best goalkeepers in the world, not just one of the best young goalkeepers in the world. He's one of the best in the world. So we need to try and hang on to him, especially because of his affection for the club and vice versa. Got to try and hang on to him as best we can, but I understand that we are dealing with the, I don't know what you want to call him, of agents. The most difficult, the most whatever.
I don't think it's as dire as people are making out to be. I mean, there's bonuses assigned to his contract currently that I think have to see out the season, and it benefits him to do that, get that now before going over a contract negotiation, I think. And, you know, then you could use those bonuses to your advantage. So I think both sides are aware that it's going to come to a fork at some point, and it's just going to happen. Let me move on. Get over it.
Yeah, the sooner they sit down, the better, though.
Okay.
If he goes anywhere, though, I would like to see him go to Real Madrid, because I don't want Leonardo to have his hands on him. Definitely don't want him going to Juve. I don't really want him going to the Premier League either, because I know what the fans are like here, and I wouldn't like seeing people I know tweeting shit about him, basically. So yeah. Real Madrid, I know they're a toxic fan base as well, but at least they're over there, you know. So, yeah, or just send him to Inter in a swap deal for Icardi. Moving on. That's it, I think, lads. I don't think there is anything else. We'll end it on that note.
I can't.
Title of the podcast. Icardi for Donnarumma.
Question mark. Milan sanctioned major swap deal. Yeah, thank you for listening, everyone. It's been a good one. It feels like two wins, but it's not. It's a win and a draw. And good one, Gooden. Is it Gooden?
You said it.
You said it.
I know. Do you never say that?
No, we speak English.
Good one. You actually say good one.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Good one, mate.
What was that? What, Australia?
That's you. Yeah, whatever. I don't care. Let's end this.
Yeah, thank you for listening, everyone. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher or at Kilpin Chronicle for some more explicit Milan-based rants. Been joined by Anthony Torgrew, top fella, top geezer.
Yeah. follow me on Twitter, Torgrew45.
It's been a good one. You guys can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Madison_DT.
Yeah, thank you for watching, everyone, and we will catch you next time.
La rimette dentro, esce Radu, porta vuota. Gol! Gol! Abbiamo battuto il gatto nero! Li abbiamo battuti tutti, Alessio! Grande Alessio! È bella la vita! Lava quella zolla, Alessio! Lava la quella zolla, Alessio! Lava!